Okay, great. So, congratulations to everybody on their day count. And people who are drinking today, don't consider yourself a loser. What I'd like you to consider is that you haven't found the opening yet. And you will if you're willing to stick here. So, I was not sure I was going to make it this week because I had emergency surgery and I got out of the hospital yesterday. But I did want very much to be with you. Not because I think you need to hear my experience. No, it's not because of that. I'm not a teacher, and I'm not going to express to you the way of doing the steps. I want to make this clear. Sometimes when we look at the length of sobriety, we think people may know something that we don't. And what we leave behind or what's get avoided is our lived experience. So I just encourage each of you not to hear me as a teacher, as an authority, but someone who has lived an experience that may help you see something in yourself that perhaps you don't see right at this moment. And to me, that would be a home run hit. So last week we did step one, and step one is an admission. The fight is over. We come to a conclusion that, you know what? I am powerless. I don't have the power to control or manage my drinking, and my life had become unmanageable. So here I am, an individual who has no power. What am I going to do next? How can I possibly survive this world? So what I'm hoping to give you today is a practical way to interpret a spiritual journey, not some Pollyanna or false hopes or anything. I'm talking about practicality. How is this going to help you today moving forward in your sobriety? So let's hear three words that I know you've all heard to sum up step two. Came to, and came to believe. Came, I showed up. That's it. I walked through a door I didn't want to walk through. Nobody arrives at step two because life is going well. We arrive because step one did its work for us. We admitted we were powerless. And we admitted our lives had become unmanageable, and an admission that assists us in living an illusion into the truth. We're beginning to face reality, maybe for the first time in many, many years. That admission brings us to that gateway. And now we're standing in a room with nothing left to manage. Came to, I woke up. Something shifted. Not a lightning bolt. More like the way your eyes adjust to a dark room. Shapes start forming. You realize you've been stumbling around into the furniture for years. Came to believe. I arrived somewhere. Not all at once. Not on a schedule. But I arrived. This isn't a moment. It's a journey. And I want to talk to you about that journey tonight. See, I see two roads into belief. There are two ways a person comes to believe in something. The first thing is practical. You work at it, you study, you listen. You watch other people who seem to have something you don't, and you try to figure out what they are doing differently. You take steps. You show up to meetings. You read the literature. You do the work with your hands and your head, and you hope your heart catches up. The second is grace. Grace doesn't ask your permission. Grace doesn't wait for your readiness. Grace moves through you the way wind moves through an open window. But here's the thing. The window has to be opened. And step one is what opens the window. We admitted we're powerless. Really admitted it. Not performed it. Not said the words to get people off our back being cracked. Self-will is like a muscle. We think it's a good thing. Strong will, iron will, muscles fatigue. They tear. They fail at the worst possible moment. And I had been white-knuckling in my life with a muscle that never was built to carry that kind of weight. So I needed something else, something that didn't get tired. Something that didn't depend on I'd slept well or had a good day or strong enough to fight. I need a power greater than myself. Now, here's where this gets interesting. And here's where it gets honest. The program says a power greater than ourselves. It doesn't say which one, and for good reason. Some of us choose the group. Some of us choose nature. Some of us choose the universe or love or the force of goodness in the world. And those are real choices, and I respect them. But I want to tell you what I noticed. Some of us aren't looking for a higher power, we're avoiding one. There's the difference. Some of us are so full of resistance toward the church that we grew up in, toward God we were told about as kids, toward the father or mother of the institution that failed us, that we picked a smaller power, not because it's what we believe, but because it's what we can accept without having to let go of our anger. I understand that. I'd lived that. And here's what I had to ask myself. And I invite you to sit with this too. If I lower the bar, what am I willing to believe in? Does that lower the power available to me? If I choose a power that's comfortable instead of a power that's limitless, am I compromising my own recovery to protect my pride? I chose the God of my fathers, not because someone told me to, but because I asked myself a simple question. Why would I leave power on the table? I chose miracles. I chose an advocate. I chose a creator. A power beyond what I can imagine. And that's the point, beyond what I can imagine. Not something I can measure or explain or fit into a box. Something bigger than my understanding. Is that practical? I think it's the most practical thing I've ever done. Because all it cost me was my resistance. That's it. I didn't have to become someone else. I didn't have to understand theology. I didn't have to forgive everything overnight. I just had to stop fighting. Why choose an ally when you can choose an advocate? Why choose a concept when you can choose a relationship? Why choose something you can explain when you could choose something that will carry you through what you cannot explain? So now I had the beginnings of a power greater than myself, a power that provides, a power that doesn't fatigue. And this step says this power could Restore us to sanity. Restore. Not rebuilt. Not replace. Not create from scratch. Restore. You ever see someone restore a classic car? A 1967 Mustang sitting in the barn for 30 years, rusted, faded, engine seized? You look at it and you think, that's done. That's gone. There's nothing left. But the guy who restores it, he doesn't think that way. He knows what's under the rust. He knows that the frame is still true. He knows the engine was built to run. He doesn't look at what it became. He looks at it, what it was made to be. That's what step two is offering us. We are not looking to be made anew. We are looking to be brought back from rust, brought back from the years in the barn, brought back from the version of ourselves that forgot what the engine was built to do. We're looking to unlearn, not to learn something we never knew, to unlearn what covered up. What was always there. And then there's that word sanity. When I first read step two, I kind of got stuck there. Sanity. Does that mean I was insane? Was Wilson saying I was crazy? I don't think so. I think Wilson wasn't making a medical diagnosis. I think he was talking about something deeper. Wholeness. Sanity is wholeness. It's the opposite of being fragmented, pulled in every direction by fear, by craving, by the lie that says, you are what happened to you. To be restored to sanity means I can return to the reason I'm here. What's my purpose? What talents did I bury? What potential is still there in that barn, waiting for someone to believe it's worth restoring? And that's the door step two opens. Not a new life because we became new people, a new life because we were brought back, because someone, some power, looked at the rust and the years and the damage and said, I know what's under there, and it's worth restoring. Came to believe three words, a whole journey. I came. I showed up broken. I came to. I opened my eyes. I came to believe. I stopped fighting and let something bigger carry what I couldn't. The restoration was never about becoming someone I wasn't. It was about remembering who I was before I forgot. Friends, this journey that we're on together is a journey of action. It isn't about learning and making notes and checking what we know. I want us to get into the heart. And if you're up to it, I have five questions that you may want to consider over the next week. What are they? Where in my life am I still white-knuckling with self-will? And what would it look like if I let go of that grip? Two, am I choosing my higher power out of belief? Or am I choosing a smaller one to avoid letting go of my resistance? Three, What talent, purpose, or part of myself have I buried? And what would it mean to believe it's still there, waiting to be restored? Four, if came to believe is a journey, where am I on it honestly? Still showing up, starting to wake up, or arriving at something I can trust? Underline that word trust. It's a big word. Five, what would change in my recovery if I stopped asking for a power I could understand and started asking for one that could carry what I can't?